than the highly agile combat shuttles he'd trained on at Alderaan. "How are you doing?" Etanu asked. They decided earlier to keep their comms channel open. "I'm fine," Zack said, and reminded himself for the 100th time that there was over 500 feet of ship behind him. "Not that maneuverable, are they?" he said.
"You'll get used to it. A lot different than the strike fighters, but the concepts are the same," Etanu said.
Zack and Etanu were the last in a line of 20 shuttles. The four large transport subcarriers detached themselves from the main hull of the ship. There were more, but they weren't flight-ready.
"Just stay on my six and you'll be fine," Etanu said.
The other ships registered on his shuttle's computer systems. Once they were well clear of the Star Carrier, they increased their speed. Nulsen would be moving the Star Carrier from its hiding place behind one of Sethion's moons in a little while. They headed for the northern hemisphere, angling their approach to come in on the far side of Haven 201. This would keep their civilian craft away from the line of battle. Zack brought up the latest feeds, and the large mass designated Alpha Land Force was steadily moving toward the Boxan Sanctuary. He thought of opening a comms channel to Kaelin. She was down there in danger herself, but it wouldn't stop her from giving him a tongue-lashing for doing what he was doing. He'd only been flying for less than 6 months and had started more or less on a dare from Hicks. He liked flying. It was a lot of fun, and it gave him some time with Kaelin he wouldn't normally get to have. The frozen ice cap that comprised Sethion's northern hemisphere rapidly approached as he took in the view of the Boxan home world with the large yellow clouds. The atmospheric readings showed that the planet was extremely toxic. Nothing could live on the surface. Sethion was a world ravaged by a brutal civil war whose time span was longer than Zack had been alive. The shuttle's system registered that they were passing through the troposphere, but the friction that would no doubt be assailing the shuttle's hull couldn't be felt inside. He cut a swath through the poisoned atmosphere, along with the other shuttles. It was a smooth ride, and Zack kept in line with the rest. They had an approach vector already pre-assigned to them, and as the other shuttles peeled off to their assignments, Zack followed his coordinates. He was low enough to make out certain land features in the vast icy expanse. The Boxan refugees had carved out a meager existence deep within the ice, and he couldn't imagine living like that. As he approached his designated landing area, he extended the landing gear. There were several Boxans already on the ground. Zack landed the shuttle and opened a comms channel to the compound.
"Shuttle 1001, ready for pickup. Time is wasting," Zack said.
"Welcome to Sethion. Refugees are being routed to your ship," Clattimore said.
Zack lowered the loading ramp, and the lower ship cameras showed Boxans making their way to his ship.
"Commander, where's Kaelin?" Zack asked.
"She's in a strike fighter flying reconnaissance," Clattimore said.
Zack squeezed his eyes shut. He knew it. There was no way she'd be sitting around while there was something to be done.
"Understood," he said.
"Once your shuttle is full, you're cleared to leave. Get them to the Star Carrier and return," Clattimore said.
The comms channel closed.
"Athena, can you locate the crew?" he asked.
The AI showed him three strike fighter designates on screen, all flying on approach to the land force. Zack frowned.
"Yeah, right. Reconnaissance my ass," he said quietly.
Boxan refugees loaded onto a shuttle, and one of the oldest Boxans he'd ever seen came to the cockpit. The old Boxan frowned. He hadn't expected Zack to be flying the ship.
"Hello, I'm Zack."
The old Boxan put down the large metallic case he'd been carrying and sat in the co-pilot seat.
"I'm Cordelier."
Zack frowned.
"Make yourself at home," he said.
Cordelier looked at the readouts on the screen and then glanced at Zack.
"Human?"
"That's right," Zack said, and brought up the onboard camera feed.
They were nearing capacity. He opened a comms channel to the Boxan coordinating the refugees.
"Pack them in until there's no room," he said.
Cordelier's eyes widened.
"We're already nearing capacity for this craft as it is."
"I know, but I don't want to leave anyone behind," Zack said.
Cordelier regarded him for a moment, and then nodded to himself.
"You remind me of someone. I think I'm going to like you."
Zack snorted.
"Thanks, I think."
The loading ramp was closed, and Zack engaged the engines. It took more power to get them off the ground, and he felt he was flying an overbloated whale of a ship, but he didn't care. The more Boxans he could get off now would be fewer that were in danger when the battle began. Zack opened a comms channel back to the Star Carrier. "Shuttle 1001 has lifted off and we're fully loaded. Should be there shortly," he said. He glanced at the readout showing the land forces' position. He didn't know how they were moving so fast, but that army was going to reach the compound before Zack's shuttle made it back to the ship.
"The protectors are coming," Cartelier said.
Zack nodded and increased the speed. Chapter 31. The exhilaration of being in a strike fighter filled Kalen with a burning anticipation and thrill at flying such a superb aircraft. That is, that was how she'd felt when they first left the Haven. They'd done several high-altitude flyovers using the onboard cameras and sensors to send recon intelligence back to the cruiser. The Protector Ground Force was made up of massive ground troop carriers, combat mechs, and power-armored boxins with exoskeleton support that allowed the wearer to move at astonishing speeds. On Earth, she'd had to familiarize herself with various combat scenarios pilots would be called upon to deal with and incorporate those into the design of the aircraft her company manufactured. Never in all those briefings was there a scenario where a ground force could move at the speeds she was seeing. As she looked below, she felt as if her gut had been clenching the entire time she'd been up here. The Zygins did this. Cetheon was the measure of what the Zygins would do if they established a foothold on a world. By Boxin accounts, the Zygins were even more powerful now than when they'd broken free of the Boxins.
"We can't let this happen to Earth," Kalen said over an open comms channel with Katie and Hicks.
"We won't," Hicks said, with Katie echoing the same.
Kalen glanced over at the lower part of the heads-up display. The rest of the strike fighter squadrons were on their way. She sucked in a breath and gunned the thrusters while bringing the weapons systems online. Hicks and Katie followed.
"What are you doing?" Hicks asked.
"Attacking them,"
Kalen said. "We're right behind you. Let's give those protectors something to worry about," Hicks said.
Kalen guided her strike fighter down and triggered the twin plasma cannons. Molten fury rained down on the protectors. She concentrated her fire on the power-armored troops since they were the most exposed. Hicks and Katie flew on either side of her, doing the same. They lined up for another run. Targeting alarms blared in the strike fighter cockpit as the sky lit up around her. Kalen broke off the attack and increased her altitude. The rest of blue and gold squadrons caught up to them. They coordinated their attacks, cutting into the protector lines, but they still kept coming. It was as if the losses they were sustaining didn't matter at all. They were a group with a singular purpose. Several strike fighters were shot down, and each time they tried to provide covering fire for the pilot, they were met with heavy resistance until the protectors killed their targets. A general comms signal to clear the area came from Varek on the cruiser. As soon as the strike fighter squadrons cleared the area, a salvo fired from the cruiser in low orbit, raining hell down on the protectors. Kalen had swung her craft around to line up for another attack run when she noticed that they were almost upon the Haven. She peered at the map on her heads-up display to double-check what she was seeing. There were large shuttles taking off and landing, along with massive transport carriers. A comms channel opened to them from the Haven.
"All strike fighters, break off your attack. You are to run escort for the shuttles and carriers. They're to be covered for their entire duration near the planet. Once they're out of range, you're to await the next ship to return to the planet's surface. This will continue until all refugees are free. Battle Commander out."
Kalen flew her ship towards the landing zone on the far side of the Haven. She understood why Cladomore had given the orders. There was no way they were going to keep the protectors from getting inside the compound, and eventually those troops would circle around and attack the landing zone. A large shuttle lifted off the ground and she and Hicks flew as escorts. There weren't any shots fired at them from the protectors, and Kalen assumed they weren't close enough yet, until she glanced to the side and saw the nearly continuous rain of fire from the cruiser. They neared the edge of the atmosphere, and Kalen brought her fighter to a stop, hovering. She and Hicks monitored the shuttle as it headed for the Star Carrier. Kalen frowned as if there was something off about what she was seeing.
"There's another shuttle coming," Hicks said.
"All right, I..."
Kalen's voice trailed off. Something was definitely off. The shuttle that had just left the planet slowed down on its approach to the Star Carrier. Target lock alarms flashed across her heads-up display as bright red flashes spawned from the shuttle's hull and small, tear-shaped ships flew towards them.
Kaelin's mouth went dry.
"Drones!"
she cried, and engaged the thrusters. Hicks was right behind her.
"I thought we took care of all of them,"
he said. She locked in her target and opened fire. She got one, and the other drones attacking the shuttles veered off to meet their attack.
"At least it's not the waves of them we saw before. How about I give them something to chase and you take them out?"
Kaelin said.
"I've got your back," Hicks replied.
Kaelin sped forward, firing the plasma cannons and angling away from the drones so they'd chase her. She flew in close to the shuttle's hull so the drones couldn't get a clear shot of her ship. Hicks took out the group one by one, chasing her. They alerted the cruiser of the drone presence and a general alert went out to all fighters.
"The timing of the drones showing up again is suspicious," Hicks said.
"You think the protectors are controlling them somehow?"
Kaelin asked.
"We start getting boxins off the planet and drones suddenly start showing up again. It's not that much of a stretch," Hicks said.
Another shuttle was making a return run to the planet. They had to keep their formations tighter due to the drone threat. Kaelin watched the scan readout and she heard Hicks suddenly gasp.
"Oh, shit! Damn it!"
Hicks said. Kaelin flew around the shuttle and saw a trail of vapor leaking from Hicks's strike fighter.
"One of those drones flew right into my engines," Hicks said.
The tail sections were blackened with damage, and she watched as he struggled to keep the ship straight.
"Head back to the cruiser,"
Kaelin said.
"I'm not going to leave you, Commander,"
Hicks said.
"Fine, then it's an order. You're no good up here anymore. Get back to the cruiser,"
Kaelin said. Hicks's fighter stayed where it was, and she could just imagine him sitting there with that brooding intensity of his when he was feeling mulish.
"Please,"
Kaelin said.
"All right, I'll get back to the cruiser and get another ship," Hicks said, and pulled away from the shuttle.
The shuttle that was heading toward the surface changed its approach angle and swung out back into space. Kaelin opened a comms channel to the shuttle.
"Commander," Garrock said, "Cladomore ordered all shuttles to head back to the Star Carrier."
"Who's left on the surface?"
Kaelin asked.
"There's a large transport carrier and a shuttle,"
Garrock said.
"Did they get everyone out?"
"The last of them are being loaded on those ships."
Garrock's voice suddenly cut out. Kaelin frowned. The comms channel was still opened.
"Garrock? What's wrong?"
"Commander, the drones are making another attack run."
Kaelin engaged the thrusters and maneuvered around the shuttle.
"Get back to the Star Carrier,"
she said. Kaelin swung around the shuttle and saw a swarm of drones heading toward her. There was no way she could take them all on her own. There must be a command and control unit nearby. The heavy cruiser moved toward her and opened fire on the drones.
"Athena, can you detect any command and control signals for the drones?"
"The cruiser's scans don't reveal any trace signals for the drones,"
the AI said.
Kaelin frowned.
"What about on the planet where the protectors are?"
She moved the strike fighter away from the heavy cruiser. The cyber warfare suite was targeting the drones and taking them out, but the progress was painfully slow. They could still do a lot of damage to the remaining shuttles and transport carrier yet to leave the surface.
"I'm unable to detect a clear signal from the planetary surface, but there's a high probability that your instincts are correct. I've uploaded the known command and control signals to your ship,"
Athena said. Kaelin engaged the thrusters and sped toward the planet. Chapter 32 Cladomore watched as the combat shuttles hovered over the troop carrier. The refugees hurried aboard the shuttles and carriers with a smooth efficiency that must have come from countless practice drills and living under the threat of losing their homes at a moment's notice. He'd tried to get Counselor Essiforn to leave with one of the earlier transports, but she'd adamantly refused and had instead stuck by his side. He'd been at the front line, fighting alongside his soldiers and the fighters from Haven. They fought well, and their battle songs would be sung throughout the great expanse. The Haven's automated defenses had helped stem the protectors for a time, but they eventually failed. They had fallen back to the landing zone, making sure all the refugees would get on a ship. These would be the last. A comms channel opened to him.
"Time to go, Battle Commander," Zack said.
Cladomore swung his gaze toward the last shuttle, nearly scolding the human who had the least amount of flight experience because he was the last to leave the planet, the most dangerous run of all. The transport carrier engines propelled the ship into the air. Plasma blasts from nearby combat mechs fired into the hull, and Cladomore raised his weapon and fired back at the mechs. Boxen's soldiers followed his lead, and a combat shuttle moved to intercept, firing a salvo back at the relentless protectors. Cladomore glanced up and saw the transport carrier speed away from them,
The combat shuttle exploded, and Clattomore threw himself over Counselor Essiforn to protect her from harm. He regained his feet and helped the Counselor up.
"Fall back!" Clattomore said.
They retreated toward the last shuttle, which hovered in the air and came toward them with the cargo bay doors opened. The soldiers fired on the protector forces as they climbed aboard the shuttle. The ship dipped dangerously to the side and then righted itself. Clattomore stood just inside the cargo bay and fired his weapon into a line of combat mechs. The soldiers on either side of him were hit and went down. His weapon stopped firing, its power cell depleted. He roared his defiance at what the Zygins had wrought upon his species. Plasma blasts from above rained down on the approaching protector line, leaving flaming stumps in their wake.
"Whoever's piloting that shuttle, go now! I've got you covered!" Kalen said.
"Kalen!"
Zack said.
"Not now, human! You heard her! Go!"
Clattomore said. The cargo bay doors closed and the shuttle lurched upward. Clattomore raced toward the cockpit and the Boxen refugees scrambled to get out of his way. Zack's gaze stayed focused on the readout in front of him. The engines were at maximum.
"That's all she's got. We took quite a beating," Zack said.
Clattomore sat in the co-pilot seat. The overfilled shuttle was still gaining altitude.
"What the hell is that?" Zack said.
In the distance, a swarm of drones were attacking the heavy cruiser, with smaller groups heading toward the last shuttles that were making their way toward the Star Carrier. A large pack of tear-shaped drones broke off from the main group and headed straight for them.
"Turn the ship around," Clattomore said.
After taking out the combat mech, Kalen sped over the remaining protectors, scanning for the command and control signal that she'd gotten from the Athena. The protectors had been so focused on the transport carrier that they hadn't paid any mind to one strike fighter as she'd flown over them. Her plasma cannons were almost depleted of ammunition. She banked to the side, maximizing the strike fighter's scanning range. As she approached the rear line of protectors, she got a positive ping and a target lock for the drone command and control signal. There was a ring of mechs protecting a small tower. Kalen sped toward it, and the combat mechs opened fire. She weaved back and forth, narrowly avoiding the plasma bolts, and returned fire. The strike fighter's cannons flared to life, and her own plasma bolts ripped through the line of combat mechs, cutting the transmitter tower in half. She let out a gasp and swung the ship up and away from the protectors. Plasma bolts slammed into her fighter, and Kalen fought to maintain control of her ship. The shuttle was slow to respond to the controls as Zack tried turning the ship around. Since they'd never left Sethion's atmosphere, they gained some speed as they returned toward the surface. Fireballs were shooting past the nose of the shuttle as if a sudden meteor shower were occurring.
"Now what?" Zack said.
Clattomore glanced out the shuttle's windows.
"It's the drones. Their trajectory is off. It's as if they're just falling out of the sky."
"The command signal must be offline," Zack said.
Clattomore nodded and opened up a comms channel back to the cruiser.
"Varric, what's your status?"
"Sustained heavy damage, Battle Commander. We lost two of the shuttles. All transport carriers are accounted for and on board the Star Carrier,"
Varric said. Zack's eyes widened.
"What about the strike fighters?"
"There are some still unaccounted for, including Kalen's," Varric said.
Zack's stomach sank to his feet, and he shifted in his chair. His hands went to the controls, but he didn't know what to do. He looked out the window at the planet's surface. He opened a broadcast comms channel.
"Kalen, do you read?"
Zack's eyes were glued to the hollow interface while he waited for a response.
"Battle Commander," Varric said. "Detecting an energy anomaly at the Haven."
"Send us your readings,"
Clattomore said. The hollow screen showed a series of readings, and Clattomore sat back in his chair, looking worried. A comms channel opened, and the strike fighter's designate came on screen.
"Kalen here. I've taken out the control unit for the drones, but my ship has taken damage. Engines are working at 20% and falling."
"Kalen, we read you," Zack said, and looked at Clattomore. "What does that mean? 20%?
Clattomore didn't reply.
"Kalen, you need to put as much distance between yourself and the Haven as you can. 20% engine capacity isn't enough for you to break orbit."
"Acknowledged,"
Kalen said.
"Set down somewhere and we can pick you up," Zack said.
"No,"
Clattomore said.
"You must listen to me and fly away as fast as you can."
The scanners showed a strike fighter flying alongside them, and then a strange alarm sounded.
showing symbols Zack didn't understand.
"Battle Commander, you need to get that shuttle away to escape the blast radius,"
Varric advised. Zack frowned.
"What's he talking about?"
Clattamore stared at him intently.
"The Protectors have a nuclear bomb with an energy signature capable of decimating the entire northern ice shelf."
Zack's eyes darted to the windows and back to Clattamore.
"How do we get her out of there?"
Clattamore shook his head.
"How do we get her out of there?"
Zack asked again, and then slammed his fist on the console.
"Kaelin, you have to get out of there. You have to try,"
he said, his voice croaking at the end.
"Zack,"
Kaelin said. His hands went for the shuttle's controls, preparing for maximum thrust.
"You have to turn the shuttle around. All those boxins are depending on you to get them to safety,"
Kaelin said. The comms channel went offline in a haze of static. Zack's vision blurred, and he hastily wiped his eyes. Clattamore shifted in his seat, and Zack's hands flung to his sidearm. He pulled the pistol out and pointed it at the boxin battle commander.
"I swear to God, if you try to take control of this ship from me, I'll squeeze the trigger," Zack said. "I'll do it! I swear to God I will! I won't leave her!"
Clattamore held up his hands, and the knowing look that Kaelin's death was all but certain struck Zack like a blow.
"Is that what she would want?"
he asked calmly. Zack's shoulders slumped. His mind raced, trying to think of a way to save Kaelin. But there was nothing he could do. He couldn't even talk to her. He dropped the pistol, and it clanged to the floor. Glaring at the planet below, he swung the shuttle around, heading away from the haven, and hating himself for doing it. He watched the radar screen that showed Kaelin's strike fighter. Another strike fighter zipped past the shuttle.
"I've got her, Casanova. You get those boxins to safety,"
Katie Garcia's voice sounded over comms. The strike fighter's control panel was damaged, and Kaelin didn't know how the ship was even still flying. She tried to nurse the craft along and gain as much altitude as she could, but engine capacity was down to 10%. She'd taken fire from the Protectors after taking out the control tower and had barely escaped.
"Commander, at your current speed, you won't escape the blast radius of the Protector bomb,"
the Athena's AI said, its voice coming through the speakers inside her helmet.
"I know,"
Kaelin said. She maintained her ascent, knowing the futility of it. But she had to try. She knew the engines would give out, and then she'd either crash the ship and die, or be caught in a nuclear blast. Kaelin clenched her teeth together and felt her heart pound in her ears. This was it. She was going to die here. Her panic-stricken thoughts raced, and then a sense of calm came over her. She shifted her gaze to the sky above, thinking of Zack and how he would never forgive her for dying on him. A crushing pang of guilt filled the back of her throat as she instantly regretted all of those lost moments they could have had. There was always something drawing their attention, whether it was her training or Zack trying to figure out how to bring down the shroud barrier protecting Earth. Her vision blurred with the tears she couldn't hold back anymore, and her thoughts drifted to the family she'd left behind on Earth and how she'd never see any of them again. How she and Zack would never go to the island getaway they'd mused about. She really just wanted to lie on the sand and listen to the sound of the waves as they lulled her away to a peaceful oblivion. A high-level chime pierced her thoughts. The engine was down to 4%, and she was no longer gaining altitude. This was it. A bright flash engulfed the sky in a blazing white light. Kaelin twisted around in her seat and saw a gigantic mushroom cloud spreading from the haven. She drew in a deep breath and blew it out. But as she was turning back around, something sped past her ship so fast that she thought she might have imagined it. Without warning, Kaelin was jarred against her seat as something slammed into the back of her ship. There was another heavy bump, and she was knocked to the side. Kaelin pulled herself up and craned her neck to see what was behind her. Kaelin let out a small, jubilant laugh as she saw Katie Garcia waving at her. Katie gestured to her helmet, and Kaelin turned on her suit-to-suit comms.
"Hang on! I don't think these ships were designed for this," Katie said.
Kaelin turned back around and adjusted the straps so she was secure.
"This won't be gentle,"
Katie said. The strike fighter slammed into her ship with unrelenting force. With her own strike fighter's systems damaged, There were no inertia dampeners, and Kaelin bore the crushing G-forces as they reached escape velocity. She gritted her teeth and fought to stay conscious.
"Just hold on a little longer,"
Katie urged. Kaelin squeezed her eyes shut. A sharp, stabbing pain spread like lightning across her middle. The strike fighter shook violently, and Kaelin cried out, blinking phosphenes from her vision as she felt her consciousness start to slip away. Katie Garcia called out to her, and it sounded as if she were speaking through a long, dark tunnel. With the last shred of her strength leaving, the darkness swallowed her up. Chapter 33 Ed Johnson had a few vices he absolutely must surrender to whenever he was in the city that never sleeps. The island of Manhattan itself was home to as many foreigners as Americans these days, but the old culture that had made the foundation of New York City what it was today could still be found. The luxury town car pulled to a stop. Iris Barrett climbed inside and handed him a small white paper bag. Ed took the bag and opened it, already catching a whiff of the contents.
"Those things will kill you," Iris said.
Ed breathed in the sweet smell of dried onion and garlic flakes and peeked inside the bag.
"I know they will. But you can't come to New York and not have either pizza or an everything bagel with cream cheese," he said, taking a healthy bite.
The creamy blend of flavors caressed his mouth, and he sighed happily while he chewed. Iris handed him a napkin. Ed took it and offered her the other half of his bagel, but Iris just shook her head with a slightly bemused expression. The driver pulled the car away from the curb, and they resumed their journey to the UN.
"How many years has it been since you've eaten bread?" Ed asked.
Iris arched a brow toward him.
"I'm sure that information is in my dossier," she said.
Ed finished half of the bagel and decided to save the other half for later. The meeting today with the UN Security Council was something of a special occasion since there would be Boxen representatives planetside for once.
"Well, I'd like to know," Ed said.
Iris was glancing out the window, almost constantly on the lookout for any threats to his life. The car pulled in front of the UN building and they were guided to a queue, along with everyone else. Usually, Ed would have flown in, but he'd been looking forward to an authentic New York City bagel for a long time.
"Since I was 7 years old, and I've been healthy ever since," Iris said.
He tried to imagine Iris as a child and couldn't. She opened the door and took a look around before gesturing for him to follow. They walked across the campus and headed toward one of the entranceways.
"I've forwarded the agenda to your PDA," Iris said.
Ed used his implants to bring it up on his own internal heads-up display.
"So you're going to tell them today, then?"
Iris said. Ed nodded.
"They have to know the barrier is a short-term fix."
"You need to give them a timeline. Otherwise, it'll just get put on top of the large pile of things that need to be done," Iris said.
"We need to study the barrier as much as we need to build ships. If the latest projections are accurate, it could be disastrous for the entire solar system," Ed said.
He was so busy reviewing the meeting agenda that he walked right into Iris. Ed started to trip, but Iris caught him with one hand and held on to him. He looked up at her and saw that she was looking across the courtyard. Ed connected his neural link to Iris's implant so he could see what she saw. A Boxen stood in full power armor in the middle of the courtyard. He was so still that Ed would have missed him. The scan from Iris's implants had broken down the power armor into units.
"What do you suppose he's doing there?" Ed asked.
Iris frowned.
"Ed, you need to go back to the car and get out of here," she said.
"What is it?"
The Boxen's identity appeared on his HUD. "Evoth, Strike Commander."
"That's the one who went with Kyle Matthews to investigate the Shroud monitoring devices," Ed said.
He'd made it a point to familiarize himself with all the joint human-Boxan missions since they were still so infrequent. When that changed, there would be no way he'd be able to keep track of it all. The Boxen Strike Commander noticed them and charged. The breath caught in Ed's throat and Iris shoved him back. Then she ran towards the charging Boxen, pulled out her stun baton, and leaped to the side, jamming the baton into the Boxen's side. The maximum amount of voltage released through the baton, but the Boxen didn't slow down. Iris ran in front of the Boxen. He tried to grab her, but she scrambled out of the way. She grabbed his hand and tried to use the boxen's momentum, but he pulled her into the air. Iris held on and glanced over at Ed.
"Detonator!"
she said through gritted teeth. Ed backed away several steps and froze for a second, not knowing what to do. The boxen seemed focused on him despite Iris's attempts to fight him off. Ed sent a coded message to the UN security force and alarms started going off. Automated bomb detection units would be dispatched, but Ed wasn't sure if they could detect whatever the boxen had done. The boxen threw Iris off of him as if swatting a fly and focused his flaxen-eyed gaze on Ed. Ed glanced over at Iris's crumpled form on the ground. The boxen took a few steps toward him, and Ed started running, hearing the heavy footsteps of the boxen chasing him. He veered off toward the streets and heard people screaming. Why was the boxen suddenly trying to kill him? It didn't make any sense. There was a loud pop, followed by a bright flash, and Ed was pushed to the side. He tumbled to the ground, people still running and screaming around him. There was smoke rising from the UN, and a large chunk of the building was gone. The UN security forces arrived, firing their weapons at the boxen while Ed scrambled back, his eyes wide. Their weapons had hardly any effect on the boxen, and the 10-foot-tall alien closed in on him. Seemingly out of nowhere, a plasma bolt slammed into the boxen's chest, followed by another that ripped through the armor, and the boxen collapsed to the ground. Ed gasped as the security force turned and pointed their weapons toward him. Glancing behind, he saw Skranix. But the boxen glanced at the security force and held up his weapon, slowly placing it on the ground in front of him. The UN security force shouted for Skranix to get on his knees, and Ed watched as the boxen complied with the security force's commands amid the sounds of other law enforcement agencies arriving. Ed got to his feet and found the UN security force captain.
"He just saved our lives," he said.
The captain spared him a look.
"My orders come from the top. All boxens are to be detained. This is one of the three UN headquarters that were attacked today."
Ed glanced at the boxen. Skranix looked as if he wanted to fight, but the enemy he was looking for wasn't there. He looked over at Ed.
"Zai Jinns," he said.
Ed's stomach clenched, and his mind became a jumble of questions.
"We'll get this sorted out," he promised.
Skranix regarded him for a moment.
"None of us are safe. You must prepare yourself."
Sirens blared from the arriving fire trucks. Ed glanced around at the chaos before him. People were hurt, and smoke billowed up to the New York City skyline. Ed couldn't help but think that this was only the beginning. Somehow, the Zai Jinns had made it to Earth. He turned back toward the UN building. Iris had been close to the building, but he wasn't sure if she'd been caught in the blast. His implants had recorded the entire event, and he took it back to when the boxen had charged him. The glint in his eyes told of a being that was ready to kill. Ed froze the image and looked for some sign of an internal struggle, some sign that the boxen hadn't totally succumbed to the Zai Jinn influence. But there was none. He glanced around, hearing all the sounds of the city, and felt utterly exposed. This was only the beginning. Chapter 34 Kaylin's mouth was dry, and she tried to swallow.
"Here, drink some water," Zack said, and held a straw to her mouth.
She sucked in some water and drank it down.
"Brenda, she's awake," Zack said.
Kaylin opened her eyes to see Zack and Brenda looking down at her. She tried to sit up, but Brenda held her down.
"Take it easy. It's only been a few hours, and you've broken a couple of ribs. Need to give the nanobots time to speed up the healing," Brenda said.
Zack used the bed controls to raise her up. Her ribs ached, but nothing like what she'd felt in the strike fighter. He placed his hand gently on her shoulder. Kaylin's whole body ached. Brenda told her to look at the light as she tested Kaylin's responses.
"You're going to be fine. I'll give you something for the pain, but you just need to rest for a bit."
"Where are we?"
Kaylin asked.
"We're in the med bay on the cruiser," Zack said.
"Have we left Sethion's star system?"
Zack shook his head.
"No. There's been some debate about where the refugees are going."
Zack told her that they were still bringing up the star carrier systems, and an engineering team was checking over the critical systems before they opened a wormhole. Kaylin swung her feet to the side of the bed.
"What do you think you're doing?" Zack asked.
Kaelin winced.
The Boxons could give a rock lessons in stubbornness. We can't stay here any longer than necessary.
Brenda came over from across the room.
Can't you sit still for 5 minutes? There's too much to be done. Can you give me something to help get me going?
Kaelin said. Brenda glanced at Zack imploringly.
Just for a few hours, and then I'll rest, I promise,
Kaelin said.
A few hours,
Brenda said sternly, and then looked at Zack.
You'll see that it's only a little while.
Zack nodded. I'll have the Athena lock her out of the systems temporarily. Kaelin scowled at him, but it lacked any real vehemence. Brenda returned with a cigar-shaped device and pressed one end to the skin of her neck. There was a snap hiss as the stimulants entered her system. The skin on her neck burned, and Kaelin winced, but the bone weariness abated, and the pain in her ribs faded to a dull ache. Kaelin got to her feet, expecting to be a bit wobbly. But she was fine. She glanced at Brenda.
Thank you. I promise. Just a few hours.
Zack mumbled something about keeping an eye on her as they left the medbay. Boxon soldiers were walking past them, and Kaelin suddenly stopped. She turned to Zack, the breath catching in her throat. They'd almost lost each other, and the two of them gazed into each other's eyes. Zack's were red-rimmed with worry, but his gaze softened when he looked at her. Kaelin, he said. She grabbed him by his shirt and kissed the hell out of him as they stood in the corridor, then pulled him into a hard embrace and pushed herself away.
I needed to do that.
You can do that whenever you want for as long as you need, Zack said. Kaelin's lips curved.
Let's go to the bridge and see what the holdup is.
They headed for the bridge, and Kaelin felt better than she had in a long time. It could have been the drugs Brenda had given her, but she also thought it was the fact that they were still alive. They'd done what the Boxan High Council had been reluctant to do. They reached the bridge, and the doors opened. Zack gestured for her to go first, and she led the way in. Cladomore was seated on the command couch with Majasalax at his side. Etanu and Ezra stood off to the side, listening to High Counselor Awan speak. Counselor Essaforn and Volcra were there, along with a wizened old Boxon Kaelin had never seen before. The old Boxon glanced over at them, and there was a flash of recognition when he looked at Zack.
As I've told you, if you bring the Star Carrier to Alaron, you won't be allowed to land or even enter the system, High Counselor Awan said.
Counselor Essaforn fixed her gaze on him.
We're Boxons. We deserve a place at the colony.
They stopped speaking when they noticed Kaelin and Zack standing there. Counselor Essaforn's hard gaze softened when she looked at Kaelin.
I'm so glad you're feeling better. Majasalax has told me how you pleaded with the High Council on our behalf. High Counselor Awan is convinced their fleet will shoot our ship down should we try to enter Alaron's star system.
He's not misleading you at all, Kaelin said.
Then what is to become of us? We have wounded and very few resources of our own,
Counselor Essaforn said.
You should leverage the Boxon's only ally in this and then open communications with the colony. The Nurshal's generous offer is the best you're going to get at the moment. They might not allow you to go to Nerva, but there's certainly room on Celebus Moon to get settled and regroup, Zack said.
Counselor Essaforn glanced at Etanu and Ezra.
I appreciate the sentiment, but as you've stated, you're not official emissaries for the Nurshals. What if we were to go there, only to be turned away again? Ezra's family stands high in the Nurshals Global Congress. They won't turn you away,
Kaelin said.
You will not be turned away, I assure you,
Ezra said.
There are 300,000 of us. Given the state of things, some might view this as an invasion force. But miscommunications aside, there are Boxons from the colony there and part of the fleet. You can see how our presence might be the catalyst for things to get out of control,
Counselor Essaforn said.
Kaelin cleared her throat. I suggest you be open and honest about the situation. The Boxan fleet is there to support the Nurshal's defense of the system against the Zaijins. We can't stay here. The Boxons aren't the only ones monitoring the quarantine zone. You should go to Celebus and ask the Nurshals to act as intermediaries between the Boxons that are of the colony and yourselves. I believe that if you do this, the colony will become open to you eventually, or at the very least, they'll send aid.
Counselor Essaforn glanced at Cladomore and Majasalax.
I agree with Kaelin,
Majasalak said.
I do as well,
High Counselor Awan said.
And I'll do everything in my power to see that your voices are heard,
he said, looking at Kaelin.
You were right, and we should have heeded your warning from the beginning. We should have returned to Sethion much sooner.
Kaelin regarded the High Counselor for a moment.
And the colony? You know as well as I that it's not a viable place for you in the long term.
High Counselor Awan pressed his lips together and frowned.
Has anyone ever told you that you're relentless? Welcome to dealing with humans, Clatomore said.
Kaelin smiled and heard Zack mumble something under his breath.
One thing at a time. I understand your intentions are for the betterment of our species, but it will take time,
High Counselor Awan said. It was something, at least. Kaelin nodded. Counselor Essaforn looked at Clatomore.
Have you considered my offer? She asked.
Let's get to Celebes and take care of everything there first. Then we'll discuss your offer, Clatomore said.
Kaelin glanced at Zack, and he shrugged. The meeting ended, and preparations were being made for them to leave shortly. Majasalax made her way over to Kaelin, and Valkyra followed.
You've done enough for one day, she said.
Kaelin frowned.
I'm feeling fine. I just needed to make sure things were in hand.
Valkyra bowed her head to Kaelin.
After you're rested, I'd like to discuss the connection we shared through the Mardoxian chamber.
Of course, Kaelin said.
Zack urged her to leave the bridge and get some rest, occasionally glancing worriedly over at Clatomore. When they left the bridge, she asked him what was bothering him.
I threatened Clatomore while we were on the shuttle, Zack said.
Kaelin's eyes widened.
I apologized, but you know, sometimes the heat of the moment gets the better of us, Zack said.
Kaelin took his hand and let him guide her back to the medbay for some rest. Chapter 35 Kyle glanced at the time. It had been 6 hours since he and the others had escaped from their holding cell. No alarm had been raised, which he knew couldn't last much longer.
Another patrol is coming, Tom whispered.
6 hours wasn't enough time to determine whether these were routine patrols or if the Zaijins had been alerted to their presence. They were due to meet Dawson and Pearson, and Kyle hoped they'd found a way for them to get off this ship. Kyle tried to blend in with the dark corner behind a network of piping. At his feet, the unconscious Zaijin they'd surprised earlier began to stir, and the Zaijin patrol was almost upon them. Tom glanced down at the Zaijin, and his eyes widened when he saw the alien's tail begin to twitch. Kyle raised a finger to his lips so Tom would keep quiet. The Zaijin soldier's heavy footfalls tromped toward them, and Kyle held his breath. At his feet, the Zaijin's arm started to move. Kyle gritted his teeth and squatted over the Zaijin, wrapping an arm around the alien's neck. The Zaijin started to struggle, and its tail flicked to the side, so Kyle planted his foot on it. He'd learned the hard way how much trouble those things could be. The Zaijin started making choking sounds, and Kyle clamped his mouth over the alien's mouth, hoping the noise would be drowned out by the steady hissing of the piping network. He squeezed as hard as he could. The Zaijins were strong. Even the lowly tech they'd found working in these tunnels. Kyle didn't think he could break the alien's neck, but he knew they breathed oxygen, and if he could cut off the supply long enough, the Zaijin would lose consciousness again. They were off to the side in a maintenance alcove, utterly exposed should the soldiers bother to look. The choking sounds became louder as the soldiers were almost upon them, so Kyle gritted his teeth and squeezed. The Zaijin's struggles weakened and stopped altogether. But Kyle held on until the end. He couldn't risk him regaining consciousness again.
They're gone,
Tom said. The young tech comms specialist looked down the dead Zaijin as if he wasn't quite sure that he was seeing a dead body. Kyle pushed the body to the side.
You killed him,
Tom said. I couldn't risk him waking up, Kyle answered while searching the dead Zaijin.
I know they'd do worse to us if they caught us. But it's just so...
real, Kyle said. Stay focused. Were you able to access our shuttle systems before it left?
Tom tore his eyes away from the dead Zaijin.
Yes. I was able to insert a message under the maintenance cycle, but I don't know when the cycle will be run. Even if they return to the ECF base, it could still be some time before the two computer systems run the routine, and then the person monitoring would have to notice the message.
It's the best we can do right now. I didn't plan on Evoth and the others leaving so soon. Also, I don't think they're returning to the ECF base, Kyle said.
Tom frowned. Why not?
We won't be on the shuttle, so if they returned to base without us, they'd need to explain our absence, Kyle said.
He scampered to the edge of the alcove and peered around the corner, finding the way empty. He gestured for Tom to follow, and they headed to where they were due to meet the others. Since the Boxons had left them, Kyle assumed they were getting close to Earth. Unfortunately, once the shuttle was gone, they couldn't communicate with each other using their implants, and their PDAs had been taken from them. They returned to the tunnels beneath the hangar area and waited for the others. Tom kept shifting position and fidgeting in place.
"We're going to be fine," Kyle said.
He wasn't sure if he believed it himself, but knew that a little bit of hope could get the people under one's command to focus. It just might be enough to do what they needed.
"What if the Zygens caught the others?"
"They didn't."
"How do you know?"
"Because these tunnels would be crawling with Zygens if they had," Kyle said.
Tom frowned and then sighed.
"I didn't think it would be like this. Coming out here."
"You and me both. I never imagined that any Zygens made it through the barrier. Now it seems really foolish for us and everyone else to have believed it," Kyle said.
Tom glanced at him, his eyes wide. Kyle looked away, keeping an eye out for the others. Within a few minutes, Lieutenants Dawson and Corporal Pearson came around the corner. They each were armed with the same rifles the Zygen soldiers used. A cold, icy pit settled into his stomach. Could they be under the Zygen influence?
"Colonel," Dawson said, "we ambushed a patrol and took their weapons. They're strong, but take them by surprise and they're just as vulnerable as anyone else."
Kyle nodded. "Good work. Did you find a way to get out of here?"
He glanced at Pearson, who was keeping an eye on the tunnels.
"Yeah, but not here. This hangar is much too secure. We found a smaller hangar where they're adapting escape pods," Dawson said.
"Adapting them for what?" Kyle asked.
Dawson frowned.
"We don't have much time. We should head over there. We observed a shift change and heard the Zygens talking about how hard they're being worked. They're following a rigid schedule, but there are a few minutes when we can get inside and take one of the pods. Did you guys have any luck contacting Earth?"
Tom was able to embed a message in the shuttle's maintenance systems before it left, but by the time the ECF finds the shuttle, it might already be too late, Kyle said.
"Then it's up to us," Dawson said and glanced over at Pearson, who was still keeping watch.
Kyle looked at Tom and gave a slight shake of his head. He'd have to trust that Dawson and Pearson weren't under the Zygen influence.
"All right, lead the way," Kyle said.
Pearson brought up the rear, while Lieutenant Dawson led them through the tunnels. Kyle supposed he could have asked for one of their weapons. As a superior officer, he'd be within his rights to do so without question, but if one or both of them were under the Zygen influence, his order for them to surrender one of their weapons could lead to a confrontation. He thought about warning Tom, but ruled it out. The young TechCom specialist was barely keeping it together as it was. Dawson led them through a series of adjoining, low-ceiling tunnels, and they spent much of the time crawling on their hands and knees. Eventually, they came to a maintenance hatch, and Dawson motioned for them to stop. The lieutenant cocked his ear toward the hatch, listening for a moment, and then opened it. He stepped out, and the rest of them followed. Pearson closed the hatch. Dawson led them down a dimly lit corridor and into a dark room. It seemed that the Zygens were conserving power. Dawson led them over to the far side of the room and, looking through a window, they saw a group of Zygens working on circular pods. They quickly squatted back down below the window to avoid being seen.
"See? It's a small hangar, and they put the finished pods close to the exit," Dawson said.
Kyle took another look to get a better feel for the layout, and then came back down.
"I count at least 7 Zygens in there."
"Why would they be modifying escape pods?" Tom asked.
Kyle pressed his lips together for a moment and thought.
"The only thing I can think of is dropships."
Tom frowned.
"By dropships, you mean to get their troops to the surface of Earth?"
Kyle nodded.
"We've got to be close to Earth. We know from the Boxons that the escape pods they use have homing beacons on them. They're likely disabling the beacons,
If there's a beacon on it, I can use it to send a signal to ECF command, Tom said.
What we don't know is how much flying we're able to do in one of those things, Dawson said.
It's about time we find out. Good work, you two. This is our best chance of getting out of here, Kyle said.
An audible tone sounded above, silencing them all at once. Thinking the Zaijins had finally discovered their escape, Kyle glanced back into the hangar to see the Zaijins leaving their posts. He ducked back down, noting that several were heading towards the room they were in and there was nowhere for them to hide. Kyle held up three fingers for Dawson and then gestured at the door nearest them. Dawson nodded and then motioned for Pearson to get ready. The door opened and the Zaijins came inside. Dawson fired his weapon and bright flashes from the green bolts dropped two Zaijins, but the last one screamed before Pearson shot him.
Go!
Kyle said. Dawson went through first and they filed to the side, taking cover behind one of the round escape pods. Kyle heard more Zaijins running over to investigate the noise and more shouts soon followed. They ran toward the hangar exit and green bolts zipped past them, narrowly missing. Pearson turned around and fired a few shots back, giving them some time to reach the pods. They came to the hangar exit, and in the distance, beyond the atmospheric containment shield, was a bright blue ball. Dawson took position behind them, and they traded fire with the Zaijins in the hangar. They were out of time. Kyle knew more soldiers were coming out, and it was only a matter of time before they'd be overwhelmed. He and Tom circled around the escape pod, found the entrance, and went inside. There were seats around the edge with a control panel in the center. Tom went to work bringing up the interface, and Kyle shouted for the others to get inside. Pearson came in first, and Dawson took up position inside the doorway.
Now would be a good time to get us out of here, Kyle said.
Tom was waving his hands, navigating through the controls, his face twisted into a frown.
I've got it! Door's closing, he said.
The escape pod doors began to shut, and Dawson took a seat. The Zaijins continued to fire from outside the pod. Kyle glanced at Tom.
What are you waiting for?
Colonel, the navigation system already has pre-programmed coordinates.
Tom was cut off by a loud blast from outside the pod.
If it takes us to Earth, then I don't care. Get us out of here, Kyle said.
Tom hit the button, and the escape pod's engines ignited. The burst pushed them back in their seats, and Kyle held on. It felt like the pod was spinning out of control. Secondary engines fired, and the escape pod leveled off. They couldn't see anything, and Kyle heard Dawson muttering a prayer. Chapter 36 Mar Arden stood on the bridge of what remained of the warship. Hon Berend sat on the command couch and was busy going through the reports on his console. Once he finished, he came over to Mar Arden.
They've escaped, Hon Berend said.
Mar Arden glanced at the commander.
You think letting them go is a mistake?
I've learned to trust in your plans, Hon Berend replied.
Mar Arden glanced at the main holoscreen that showed the planet Earth, home to the humans.
There's a planet full of humans down there for us to exploit. I'm not concerned about losing four of them.
The door to the bridge opened, and Chandra Renee walked in, striding purposefully to Mar Arden's side.
The humans killed a few of our crew while escaping, and we found some dead in the engineering tunnels, Chandra Renee said.
Mar Arden nodded.
If they were better soldiers, they'd still be alive. The methods the humans used to escape reveals much about their species, however.
The tunnels are a weakness, but the fact that the humans managed to arm themselves is another matter, Hon Berend said.
Don't waste your time trying to secure this place any more than you already have. We won't be here that long. Our destination is out there,
Mar Arden said, and gestured toward the distant blue orb. Hon Berend looked at Chandra Renee.
You're positive that compulsion has worked on at least one of them?
Chandra Renee's gaze narrowed menacingly.
They're under my power and will initiate contact at the appointed time.
Hon Berend nodded and looked at Mar Arden.
What's our next move?
Mar Arden switched the view on the main holoscreen, which now showed multiple communication signals. They hadn't needed to initiate any scans to detect these signals. Their proximity to the planet was enough to start receiving them.
The attack was a success. The Human and Boxen alliance is still tenuous, and with recent events, those relations will be further strained. The humans will learn that they can't rely on the Boxens, and while they're scrambling around trying to figure out who to trust, we'll move into position,
Mar-Arden said. You still believe the reason the Boxens are here is because the Mardoxian potential is in humans? Honbrand said.
I'm certain of it,
Mar-Arden said, and brought up one of the recorded video streams. An aged human male came on screen and began to speak.
The Earth Coalition Force is humanity's answer to the alien threat. Would you like to work in space and fly on one of the ships we're building for the first human fleet? Perhaps the challenge in researching the latest and advanced technology calls to you. To realize your true potential, report to your local testing center and participate in the ECF's pre-screening initiatives to help find where you'd best serve to protect our home.
The recorded video ended, and Mar-Arden looked at them.
You see? They've already initiated a screening process, essentially doing our job for us. Now we'll know who to target once we get down there. So, you see, I'm not overly concerned with four prisoners escaping. The attacks already announced our presence, and before long, humanity will learn to fear the Zygins even more than they already do,
Mar-Arden said. He crossed his arms in front of him, and the main holoscreen changed back to a view of Earth. Humans and Boxens were working to protect themselves, but it wouldn't be enough. He was just getting started, and now he had a whole planet to use. Early in the Confederation's history, their allies had believed the Boxens could never be beaten. Their hold on the Confederation was too strong. But those who had doubted the Zygins were wrong. The Boxens were a shadow of their former selves, and with another species that had the Mardoxian potential, the Zygins would be the most unstoppable force the galaxy had ever witnessed. The Boxens revered the Drawer, but even their vast empire was gone. The time for the Zygins was here, and Mar-Arden would see that the entirety of the Great Expanse would be brought under their dominion.
Chapter 37 A few days had passed since the Boxen refugees from Sethion had landed on Celebes Moon with the blessing of Nerva's Global Congress. It had been quite a shock when the Star Carrier had shown up in their star system, but after some quick communication from Clatomor and High Counselor Awan, the Boxan fleet had been allowed to pass. Kaelin was pleased that the High Counselor had kept his word. Temporary shelters were being built, and the resilience of the Boxen refugees was something to be witnessed as they set to work. Most of them stepped off the transport carriers onto the forest moon and simply looked up at the sky in awe. They were initially afraid to remove their helmets, despite knowing that the atmosphere was perfectly safe. Some were fearful of the forest, as if they expected the protectors to attack at any moment. Kaelin couldn't imagine living for so long with the harsh realities that the Boxens who'd been left on Sethion had been forced to endure. They were quite different than the other Boxens she'd met, and she wondered if the two factions would be better off going their separate ways. She didn't like those thoughts, but she had to consider them because it was a real possibility. She'd much rather see the two Boxen factions working together and uniting, which would put them both on a path to filling the large gaps between them now. The refugees would be redeemed for the trials they'd endured on Sethion, and the colonists could exist without the haunting guilt that they'd left free Boxens behind. Neither could heal without the other, and in the end, they needed each other now more than ever before. They'd buried Vitomir on Celebes. The cosmonaut had sacrificed himself to help the others restore the Star Carrier's systems. Vitomir was honored among the Boxen refugees for his sacrifice, but for the crew of the Athena, it was more complicated. The former Titus Station commander had sabotaged the space station, killing four people to join the Athena's mission. Kaelin had loathed the cosmonaut for what he'd done, which was nothing to how Vitomir viewed himself. His actions had led to the death of his own wife. After the Athena had been stranded in the Nershal star system, he'd worked to help them survive. She'd have let him rot in his quarters if it hadn't been for Hicks and the AI pointing out to her that they needed to use all available resources if they were to survive. So she'd made Hicks responsible for Vitomir, and throughout everything they'd been through,
Vitomir had helped them. The cosmonaut knew how the rest of the crew felt about him, but in the end, all they had was each other. She listened to Efren as he recounted the details of what had occurred on the Star Carrier, how they were pinned down and Vitomir had lured the combat mechs away so Efren could turn the power back on. She heard the same conflicted feelings in Efren's voice that she felt. In the end, she acknowledged that Vitomir had become part of the Athena's crew despite how they'd all felt about him. They all would have to make peace with it, because Vitomir was no longer with them. Kaelin glanced at the tall trees and listened to the sounds of the forest. The day was drawing to an end, and work would begin anew in the morning. Clattamore spotted her and walked over.
"Adjusting to your new position?" Kaelin asked.
"I've been a battle commander for a long time,"
Clattamore said.
"Essiphorn and the others trust you,"
Kaelin said.
"Prex Badax was the battle leader. I guess in Earth terms he'd be a general, except the refugees don't have a fleet to command,"
Clattamore said.
"There's more to being a battle leader than commanding fleets. They've made you their advocate and have placed you in the most trustworthy position," Kaelin said.
"Their honor is misplaced. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. I'll see to it that no Boxen forgets, and when it's time to return to Earth, we'll be with you,"
Clattamore said.
Kaelin felt her cheeks start to redden in embarrassment. "It's not just for Earth. We've seen what the Zygins are capable of, but Cetheon was monstrous. If we don't stop them, countless other species will suffer the same fate."
Clattamore regarded her for a moment.
"I once thought of your species as primitive and brash. Weak. But I was wrong. Those characteristics do exist in humans, just as they do in Boxens, but you've become a force to be reckoned with. Majasilax has said that the Mardoxian potential in you is equal to the most gifted priests in the history of the sect. Whether you meant to or not, your actions have put us all on a path that I believe will lead to the defeat of the Zygins."
Kaelin's mouth hung open, and she was rescued from a response by Zack calling out to her. He came over, leading the old Boxen refugee she'd seen on the cruiser's bridge. "This is Cardellier. He's something of a scientist," Zack said. Cardellier bowed his head.
"Mardoxian blessed," he said.
Kaelin bowed her head back to him. "What's Mardoxian blessed?" Zack said.
"It's an honored title given to only the most gifted of the Mardoxian sect," Clattamore said.
Zack glanced at Kaelin, but she could tell he was much too excited about something to pay any mind to the title Cardellier had used to address her. "Before the Chaos Wars, Cardellier studied Drar technology and was the foremost expert. He's agreed to help us with the Athena," Zack said.
"I'm afraid the human is much too excited by what I said," Cardellier said. "I merely stated that before the wars I worked with what Drar technology had been discovered. I was part of the teams that reverse-engineered its uses. Zack told me about the Shroud Barrier."
"Do you think you can help?" Kaelin asked. The thought of returning to Earth sent waves of excitement through her.
"I will do everything I possibly can," Cardellier said.
"And Tanu is getting us the materials we need to build a Star Shroud model so we can learn more about the barrier," Zack said.
Kaelin smiled. For the first time since the barrier had gone online, protecting Earth from the Zygin fleet, she felt they were much closer to getting home than they'd ever been before.
Chapter 38. The days that followed the UN attacks strained human and Boxen relations. Given the ineffectiveness of security forces to subdue Boxens in full power armor, there were motions to increase the production of more powerful weapons for law enforcement agencies across the globe. Ed Johnson knew that handing out more powerful weapons wasn't the answer. They needed specialized teams to be available to investigate alien threats on Earth, and this wasn't something the Earth Coalition Force had the authority to do. Ed thought back to the attack and remembered how Iris's weapons had failed to slow down Strike Leader Evoth, and Skranix had explained that Evoth's power armor had been modified to handle the stunners used by UN security forces. Ed was in a conference room with General Sheridan and Skranix.
"So, nothing short of a hand cannon capable of shooting plasma bolts can stop them? This isn't going to work. We need a better way to neutralize the threat," Ed said.
They had just gotten Skranix released.
Death is the only release for any Boxen under the Zygin influence, Skranix said.
Yeah, but we can't start handing out hand cannons with the advice to shoot any Boxen anyone thinks is acting suspiciously, Ed said.
We'll need to do a better job of keeping track of Boxan activities, but there are more far-reaching repercussions to this, General Sheridan said.
Ed nodded and didn't like it one bit.
Our protocols have been allowed to lapse. Cooperative mission protocols will need to be updated so a simple lie can't get anyone past security, General Sheridan said.
That will help, but we still don't know if the humans on those missions will be affected by the Zygens as well, Ed said.
We're not going to figure everything out in this room. We'll get the right people working on it, but the threat level has just gone up. We thought the Zygens couldn't get through the barrier, so if that's the case, how'd they get here?
General Sheridan asked.
They would have had a chance to slip through as the barrier was being formed, Skranix said.
Which means they've been loitering out there somewhere for almost a year, Ed said.
We need to find their ship, and we'll need strike fighter patrols to protect all the construction on the new moon, General Sheridan said.
Iris Barrett waved to him, and Ed motioned for her to come over. Her injuries hadn't been extensive, and she'd gotten back on her feet shortly after the attack.
There's an incoming call from General Hongxing, Iris said.
Ed glanced at Sheridan, and the ECF general's face hardened.
Put it through, the general said.
The nearby wall screen flicked on, showing the aged face of General Hongxing.
Thank you for taking my call, General Hongxing said.
Ed knew Sheridan was still seething about the Chinese general's appointment to the ECF.
What can I do for you?
General Sheridan said. Shang nodded.
We found something that will help shed some light on the Zygins.
The video cam shifted away from Shang to four people standing on his right. Ed's eyes widened when he recognized Colonel Matthews. The camera shifted back to Shang.
They crash-landed in a small pod in the Kunlun Shan mountain region.
Sheridan came to his feet and walked toward the wall screen, and Ed joined him.
Are they all right?
Ed asked.
We're looking after them, Shang said.
What do you want? General Sheridan asked.
The barest hints of a smile showed on Shang's face.
For you to acknowledge me and my own staff as part of the Earth Coalition Force as agreed by the UN Security Council.
General Sheridan's nostrils flared, and then he nodded.
Understood. If you want to help the ECF, you can bring Colonel Matthews, Lieutenant Dawson, Corporal Pearson, and Tech Comms Specialist Blake with you when you report for duty.
Any satisfaction General Shang had felt disappeared.
A shuttle will be dispatched to you, and we'll see you in a few hours' time, General Sheridan said, and ended the call.
He glanced over at Ed.
You said I needed to work with him. This is me working with him.
Ed nodded and was silent for a few moments. He noticed Skranix frowning.
What is it?
He asked. The Boxen regarded them for a moment.
Did they escape, or were they set free?
Ed drew in a deep breath and looked at Sheridan. They thought that if they could build their fleet and race to upgrade their technology, they could keep the Zygins from reaching Earth. They'd failed, and now at least some of the Zygins were here. He didn't know how they were supposed to keep things running and stop the Zygin compulsion from infiltrating their ranks the same time. Dark times were coming, and they needed to stick together now more than ever if the people of Earth hoped to survive.
You have been listening to Rising Force, Book 5 of the Ascension Series, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durer, Text Copyright 2017 by Ken Lozito, Production Copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing, all rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.